Our third case for this morning is Gloria Taylor against the City of Milford. And we will begin with Mr. Ravindran. Sorry, I wasn't looking at you. Ms. Ravindran.
Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. Bhavani Ravindran on behalf of Gloria Taylor as administrator of the estate of Stephen Taylor. The undisputed facts demonstrate that Officer Garrett acted as a police officer from the moment he entered Stephen Taylor's home on August 17, 2016.
So Ms. Ravindran, let me start you out right away with what concerns me about kind of the analytical structure in this case. The ultimate question is, did a state actor use excessive force? And I'm not certain, or was the state actor, you know, acting reasonably under all of the circumstances? And I'm uncomfortable with the idea that the job label governs that so strictly, whether the person is a police officer or they're a paramedic or they're a fire officer or they're, you know, somebody who works in the office but who happens to be trained in CPR. The other cases on which the district court relied, such as in particular Thompson against Cope, illustrate, you know, an obvious medical intervention, something, you know, trying to give somebody a sedative, a shot. And so we would all say, well, you know, that's what we need to look at here. And so I wonder what use all of these labels are. Is there, I mean, it seems weird to me that there'd be one rule for police officers and another rule for paramedics.
Yes, Your Honor. Within Thompson v. Cope, the reason that that label is important is only because Thompson v. Cope's holding is limited. In Thompson v. Cope, the court held that it is not clearly established that a reasonable paramedic would know he is violating rights by effecting a seizure using a paralytic. And in that opinion, the court reasoned that paramedics have a distinct set of professional standards and training, which affects whether or not a reasonable paramedic would have the same notice as opposed to a police officer who receives training on constitutional violations, seizures, and other very specific issues that police departments deal with. But I will say that the plaintiff's position at this point is that this is a question of fact. It doesn't just remain whether someone is named a police officer or paramedic, but it is determined by the actions they took at the scene of the incident. Did they take law enforcement actions or did they take medical actions?
What would All right, so when you said a magic phrase just a second ago, question of fact, the thing that makes me most uncomfortable about this case is that it seems that there are a number of critical questions of fact that didn't get resolved in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. You know, for example, when Officer Garrett enters the room, was Mr. Taylor headbutting the wall and hitting and kicking and doing all sorts of things, or as Serena and Shannon testified, doing none of those things? You know, does he just give them a foggy, I don't recognize you, what are you doing in my house? Does the officer refuse to let them give him some orange juice? You know, these strike me as extremely relevant to the question whether the force that was used was excessive. I can certainly imagine somebody, maybe even in a medical emergency, who might still be flailing around so much that an officer would need to bring them under control using, you know, subduing tactics, but maybe not. You know, it just seems to me that there are many questions of fact here.
We believe there are many questions of fact, and before the qualified immunity analysis can be entered into, it must be determined whether the actions taken were for a law enforcement or a medical purpose. We also believe there were questions of fact that were established as to every element regarding 1983. Was there a seizure?
Before you go on, let me pick up on what you just said, please. You said that it has to be determined whether the actions were for law enforcement purposes versus medical purposes. In light of your earlier statement that labels don't really matter, it's really about the training and where they're coming from, how does that law enforcement versus medical purposes fit into the analysis?
Your Honor, I would ask you and the panel to look at McKenna as an instructive case from the Sixth Circuit that describes how to conduct this analysis. McKenna held that if engaged in a law enforcement purpose at the scene of a medical call, it is still clearly established that you cannot unreasonably seize a person as a police officer. There are cases that hold that a paramedic in certain circumstances can conduct a seizure that is for law enforcement purposes, just as a police officer can provide medical aid.
So Ms. Ravindran, I'm unclear on the criteria you're asking us to employ. Are they the Graham factors for excessive force as a result of law enforcement? Are they some modified Graham factors as a result of the use of force as part of a medical approach by a law enforcement officer? Are they a different set of factors? Which are you asking us to use?
I'm asking the court to use the Graham factors. There was a clear seizure at the scene of the Taylor's home. A seizure is defined as an intentional limitation of a person's freedom, and no one can give facts that show that Stephen Taylor wanted to be held face down into a mattress for 3 minutes. He claimed he was not breathing. He asked for juice. We have facts that indicate.
To what extent is the testimony from Officer Garrett himself relevant to the application of the Graham factors? He doesn't say he was rendering medical assistance. He knows that the paramedics are on their way. He says he's using police tactics. Is that important?
Yes. Officer Garrett, in his deposition, testified that he used up to six tactics that he learned at the police academy for law enforcement engagements. They included
He never ties them to medical assistance. I mean, he's a trained paramedic as well, as it happens, but he doesn't say he's drawing on that set of expertise that he may have, does he?
No. In fact, during the hold, he testified that he said to Stephen Taylor, medical aid is on its way, indicating that he was not providing medical aid during the restraint. He does. His testimony is very supportive of the fact that there was no medical aid provided until the EMTs arrived.
So can I just ask, I mean, this goes back to my original concern. Suppose it hadn't been Officer Taylor. Suppose one of the paramedics had come into the room at an earlier moment and had taken one look at Mr. Taylor and punched him as hard as he could in the face. Would that be medical assistance?
That would not be medical assistance. And
right, so
the...
just because a paramedic does it, that's my point, doesn't automatically make it medical assistance. We certainly hope, you know, that that's what they'll do, but the fact that they're a paramedic doesn't necessarily mean they're rendering medical assistance.
Right, and taking that point further, the fact that Officer Garrett had training as a paramedic and sometimes worked part-time as a paramedic does not render every action he took on scene as medical assistance.
Ms. Ravindran, is there any information that Officer Garrett was there as a result of any criminal investigation?
No, Your Honor. There was no criminal investigation ongoing, which is part of the application of the Graham factors. There was no threat. There was no suspicion of criminal activity, which is what makes the seizure unreasonable in this matter. Going forward, Officer Garrett does try to use the excuse that there was a medical distress call as a reason that his response was medical in purpose. But he arrived at the scene of a medical distress call, did not bring in his first aid kit, entered issuing orders to the individuals in the home, did not provide juice to Stephen Taylor, despite the fact that that was the one medical remedy that was readily available. He did not check his vitals, his pulse, his breathing. He did not take his weight off of his back when vomit was clearly seen on the mattress. When Stephen Taylor indicated that he could not breathe, Officer Garrett, according to Serena Taylor, one of Stephen Taylor's nieces that was in the doorway of the bedroom during the interaction, said that Officer Garrett was putting his entire weight on the back of Stephen Taylor.
What is Ms. Ravindran, what is the plaintiff's position as to the purpose for the application of force?
The purpose of the application of force, according to Officer Garrett.
No, according to the plaintiff. What's the plaintiff's position as to why an officer would go into this home and apply force in the manner you've described?
We believe that Officer Garrett, based on the evidence before the court, had an unreasonable belief that that Stephen Taylor was a threat to himself or others based on the clenched fist and headbutting the wall, which he indicates that he believed occurred. Of course, that's disputed by Serena Taylor. So we believe that issue and that question goes to whether or not the seizure was reasonable, which should be looked at by a jury.
And is that, in your argument, what makes this more law enforcement activity as opposed to medical activity, that he thought he was a threat to himself?
There is multiple cases that would help us determine, including McKenna and Grigsby, what a law enforcement purpose is as opposed to a medical purpose. In the McKenna case, the court found that there were two actions the police officers took, even though they were responding to a distress call, that were not medical. Number one was that they clothed the subject, and number two was that they conducted a search after. What McKenna helps instruct is that you can look at the purpose of the actions and also what exactly, not necessarily just the intention, but what actually occurred there. When we have an officer who has the know-how to provide medical aid and chooses instead to detain a subject, we can see through those facts that there's an argument to be made to the jury that that was a law enforcement purpose. And if there are no further questions at this time, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal, and I thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Zimmer.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, Austin Zimmer on behalf of the defendant appellees. Mr. Garrett did not violate a clearly established right in rendering aid to Mr. Taylor.
In what way was Officer Garrett rendering aid that is supported by undisputed fact? I'm not saying is there an argument that Officer Garrett could make before a jury, but undisputed fact.
Judge Wood, I think the best place to look is page 20 of the district court's opinion, because there the district court specifically addressed the facts that the court rely on, and these facts were presented in the light most favorable to plaintiff as is required. So the first fact is Garrett was responding to the dispatch call of a diabetic problem while he was on duty.
Well, but I'm looking at page 20, and so much of what you say seems to hinge on the fact that Officer Garrett thought that this man was a harm to himself or others. But what the district court recounts in the third full paragraph on that page, Stephen fell, stumbled, and mumbled incoherently, but he did not clench his fists, move towards Garrett, headbutt a wall, purposefully hit a closet, or try to harm himself. Garrett raised his voice, told Stephen to calm down, and said, get back. Serena tries to say something, but there's nothing in the facts taken favorably to Taylor that suggests that the sort of extreme intervention that Officer Garrett engaged in, screaming at him to calm down, pinning him down, squishing his face into the bed, and so forth, was anywhere in the realm of reason. I mean, officers don't come into a room and see somebody mumbling half the Alzheimer's patients in the world, you know, would have themselves flop down onto a bed if that were enough to justify this force.
Your Honor, I'd respectfully disagree, because we have to look at, and the Seventh Circuit has told us this, to look at the specific context of the cases. And when he walked in, he was informed by Mrs. Taylor that her husband was having a sugar spell. He was training as a paramedic, so he was aware of the possible things that could happen to someone with low blood sugar.
There's no evidence of that, though. As Ms. Ravindran said, he doesn't come in wearing his paramedic hat, and none of the measures that he takes seem in the slightest degree medical to me. I think it's actually fairly common knowledge that if somebody has a sugar problem who's a diabetic, you can give them some orange juice. It's just a temporary measure. Maybe they need more aggressive intervention than that. They're taking the record in the light most favorable to Taylor. I don't see medical coming out of what Officer Garrett did.
Well, I would disagree, Your Honor, because he's responding to an emergency medical call. He learns right when he walks in, he's having his sugar spill. Taking the facts in light most favorable to the plaintiff, he sees this individual fall, he sees him stumble, and he sees them mumbling incoherently.
And why does that allow you to crush somebody onto a bed? I think his basic argument is, from the account that he gives, which a jury might believe, if he's flailing all around the room and crashing into things and kicking, then maybe what he did was quite reasonable. And if a jury were to believe his account of what went on, then that would be that. But if the jury were to believe instead the account that Serena and Shannon give, as well as the fact that when he comes in, he's not doing anything medical. He's not with the EMT team. He doesn't have, you know, he doesn't even take sort of ordinary measures that you don't need a medical kit to take. Take his pulse, for example, or say you don't need a medical kit to do that.
Well, Your Honor, then I would say the court needs to look to what was the purpose of responding to his call.
Why is that? Where does that fit in with the Graham factors and with other things? And how do we, given that this is an objective test, you know, was there excessive force used? We need to step back, obviously, in the context, but it's an objective test. What's inside his head isn't objective. That's a subjective test you're asking us to use.
Well, Your Honor, what I'm asking the court to do is you don't need to go to the Graham factors. This court can uphold the decision of the district court because this right was not clearly established. And I think the facts of this—
In what way was it not clearly established?
Because we have to look at, and this is the most important thing I think for the court to look at, is what was the purpose for Officer Garrett to be there? There was no law enforcement purpose whatsoever for Officer Garrett to be at the house. Counsel has talked repeatedly about the McKenna case, and that perfectly illustrates the difference between a law enforcement purpose and a medical purpose. In the McKenna case, when the officers respond to a medical emergency, the first thing they did was say, is he on drugs? Are there any drugs?
But let me just go to McKenna. The Sixth Circuit says whether the officer is acting as an officer or medical care provider is a jury question. And that, again, maybe I just think of procedure too much, but it seems to me that we have different ways of looking at what went on here, which sounds like a jury question to me.
And I, again, Your Honor, respectfully, I disagree with that. I think what everybody can agree with, even the plaintiff in this case, is Officer Garrett was responding there for a medical emergency. Officer Garrett was also trained as a paramedic. Officer Garrett's employer gave him the right and, in fact, encouraged him to respond to those type of things. Why Officer Garrett was in the house, he did not ask, are there any drugs present? He did not ask, did he hit you?
He asked if there were any weapons present. Would that qualify?
Your Honor, I don't think that, Judge St. Eve, I don't think that qualifies at all. I think that is a common question. And that's something that the argument that plaintiff made, but that's just a pure safety question that a paramedic would ask. Are there
any Zimmer, if he was there in a law enforcement capacity, is he entitled to qualified immunity?
Yes. If he was there for a law enforcement capacity.
As opposed to a medical reason. If he's there for a law enforcement capacity, is he entitled to qualified immunity, given his
actions? Well, Your Honor, then what I think we'd have to do, if he was there for a law enforcement capacity, for example, let's say if he was executing a search warrant, for example, that right would be clearly established. So then I think we'd have to go to the second prong of it, and did he violate that right? And then an issue of whether it was a seizure or not, and then we'd have to look at the Graham factors. But in this case,
so
in
would
this
there be an issue of fact at that point? If he's there performing in a law enforcement capacity, would there be an issue of fact that would preclude a qualified immunity finding as a matter of law?
Perhaps, Your Honor, but I think what's so apparent in this case is there's no question of fact at all of whether he was there in a law enforcement capacity.
Is it not relevant to look at his own characterization of the tactics that he was using and at those tactics themselves? There certainly is no dispute that he forces Taylor down in the bed and smushes his face down to the point that he swallows his own, he aspirates, actually doesn't swallow, he aspirates his own vomit. So this is a, I'm very uncomfortable, again, with this label idea that just because you label somebody, you know, a paramedic, then they automatically can't be using excessive police force, or if you label somebody something else. It seems to me you have to look at what they're doing objectively.
Your Honor, Judge Wood, I would agree with that completely. I think the label, whether you're a police officer, a paramedic, a firefighter, the mayor, it doesn't matter. As this court said in the Whelan case, a public employee is entitled to qualified immunity. So what we really need to look at is what was the purpose for the individual being there? And in this case,
what does he do? I mean, maybe he walks in with a paramedic purpose, but if he, you know, sits on him as he does and forces him down and does police stuff, pressure point tactics and the like, I am hard pressed. He doesn't even defend these things himself as reasonable medical measures that an emergency medical technician would perform prior to getting somebody, you know, to a hospital or to qualified medical help.
Yeah, I think that's what goes to our most compelling argument of why this right is not clearly established, because it's Garrett's conduct is not so obvious that any person in his position would recognize it as a violation. For example, his own treating physician testified that restraint may be appropriate for medical reasons when treating a hypoglycemic patient. His own police practices expert in this case highlighted.
But we have conflicting expert report. We certainly have experts that you've lined up on your side, but then we have other experts who say that Taylor's death results from anoxic encephalopathy and the cardiac arrhythmia was partly caused by Garrett. His air is cut off. He aspirates in the bottom. You know, in other words, once again, an issue of fact, experts.
Your Honor, that may be an issue of fact on the causation issue, but when we look at whether the right was clearly established,
some state actor come in and sit on you when you're not committing any crime, not threatening anyone, not in any way. There are a lot of cases that say that were decided long before these events happened.
Your Honor, but they weren't in the context of a person responding to a medical emergency. And I think why it's so difficult for this court to say this right was clearly established is plaintiff's own police practices expert highlighted this. Asked, is there clearly established national standards that govern the use of force for officers when they're rendering emergency medical assistance? They weren't able to answer that question. They said, no, I do not know. So all the points that the court raises, it goes to the fact that these aren't clearly established rights. Now, I will admit that if Garrett would have started searching the house for drugs, if he would have asked incriminating questions to Garrett's children, if he would have, like in the McKenna case, ran the license plate, all that would have changed it from a medical emergency to a law enforcement response. But we have none of that there.
But you don't think it's possible. It's just as a matter of law, you're saying it's not possible to use excessive force with no medical justification as long as the original call had a medical purpose.
There could certainly be, you know, if you shot him, that might perhaps be excessive force under the circumstances, but that's not what we have here. It's a use of restraint.
What's the difference between shooting and strangling somebody to death?
One, he didn't strangle anybody to death. That's our position. But it was a restraint that was used for a medical purpose based on that he observed him stumbling, mumbling incoherently, and falling. But there's one of the cases that cited to, there was a situation where the individual was tased and the court found that to be an appropriate medical response.
Sometimes as in Thompson, you know, you need to disable the person just to get the situation under control. But the problem is taking the facts as Taylor presents them, this isn't one of them.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because as Taylor presents the facts and agrees, this was a call for a medical emergency.
But what's dangerous about mumbling?
mumbling, stumbling, and falling coupled with low blood sugar is very potentially dangerous.
And so you block their access to orange juice. No, I mean, I am hard pressed to think that though mumbling, stumbling, and falling are a danger to anybody. Maybe the person is going to, you know, get a bruise.
It is potentially dangerous, and especially, you know, when you look at Serena's testimony that his head was bleeding. And this is what qualified immunity is for. It is for to avoid the catch-22 situation that Garrett takes action and gets sued or doesn't take action and gets sued. Because it's very easy to think of a possibility where Garrett arrived, did not do anything, Mr. Taylor fell down, injured himself, injured someone else, and then faces a lawsuit for deliberate indifference.
Normally, of course, there's no obligation on people to take affirmative steps. That's been true since the DeShaney case.
Potentially, but if he was there and he was present and he failed to act, it's potentially still the fact that he could be brought in a lawsuit. That's the purpose of qualified immunity. I think that's what the court recognized correctly. There's a potential windfall effect if qualified immunity is not granted in these cases that could prevent other medically trained people from responding to future emergencies.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zimmer. Anything further, Ms. Ravendran?
Just briefly, thank you, Your Honor. Garrett arrived and acted with as a police officer with no ability, desire, or equipment to provide treatment. He entered as an officer, assessed the threat, not the vitals, called for police backup and administered force techniques and a seizure with no medical purpose. It was clearly established law such that a reasonable police officer
called for police backup too.
He did, Your Honor. He called for the county to respond. That's when Lieutenant McCullough arrived on scene. He didn't ask for an additional paramedic. And another fact I'll point out is that on the way to the hospital, a paramedic intercept, meaning an on-duty paramedic with additional equipment, met the ambulance, entered, and started to administer aid to Stephen Taylor. But just to address some of the points raised by my colleague, yes, Officer Garrett was responding to a dispatch call, but as the court rightfully pointed out, what really matters here is the actions he took once he got there. Whether or not he was responding to a medical call goes to his awareness of whether there was a medical distress situation occurring. And under Richmond v. Sheehan, that can go to the reasonableness of the force that he used. It has been clearly established in the Seventh Circuit, at least since 2008, under the Richmond v. Sheehan case, thoughtfully written by Justice Posner, and the McAllister case and the Abdullahi case, that a prone face first restraint can be unreasonable, especially if we look at the Phillips case where the officer has awareness of a medical distress or an issue. Relating to a case in the Seventh Circuit that shows an officer's response to a medical distress call, McAllister is instructive. There was a car accident and some information that the officer had that the plaintiff in that matter may have been intoxicated. When he arrived at the scene of a car accident, he grabbed the hypoglycemic plaintiff and threw him to the ground, restraining him briefly. And that was found to be a question of fact regarding reasonableness, and qualified immunity did not apply. Under a law enforcement capacity, when we look at this case, when he took law enforcement actions, qualified immunity should not apply here. A question of fact has been established regarding whether a violation occurred, and there is clearly established law as early as 2008 regarding this issue. Regarding the doctor who indicated that a restraint could be relevant here, Dr. Zasada, one of the treating doctors, said a quick restraint for seconds for hypoglycemia could be okay to check blood pressure and blood sugar levels. He did not give an open door for any amount of restraint for a hypoglycemic patient, and he did not indicate that a face-down seizure was appropriate. Finally, there's nothing that stopped Officer Garrett from calmly talking to Stephen Taylor and allowing him the juice his family was trying to provide him. And the last point I will raise is that my colleague helped me drive home my point, and that there is a question of fact as to each issue in this case such that a jury should decide. Officers cannot pick and choose when the Fourth Amendment applies to their actions and when it does not. The Constitution applies in Chicago as it does in Milford, Illinois. Citizens should be able to rely on their right to be free of an unlawful and unreasonable seizure in any law enforcement interaction, including if an officer responds to a 911 call during a medical emergency. I thank you for your time, and I respectfully ask that this panel reverse the trial court's order granting the defendant Garrett's motion for summary judgment as to the 1983 excessive force claim.
Ms. Ravindran, in response to Mr. Zimmer's clearly established point, you're citing Richmond from 2008 and yes. McAllister, is that correct?
Yes.
Any other cases besides those two?
Abdullahi, Your Honor. It is also cited in both the appellant brief and the reply.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much to both counsel. The court will take the case under advisement.